And so this was in two dimensions. We have seen that a matrix of a rotation can be written as the exponential of theta j, where j is the simple matrix with 1 and minus 1 off the diagonal. And similarly for boosts. I'm probably changing some signs, but it's not, shouldn't be. And this was what we had for boosts. And these exponentials, the exponential of a matrix M can be felt as the sum from 0 to infinity of m to the n over n factorial, where m to the n is the usual matrix multiplication. Now, we've seen also that rotations here are fully characterized as the matrices that preserve the equal to the identity matrix that preserve the Euclidean net product, so the trans, their orthogonal matrices of determinant 1. And here we had something similar, these lambdas. We wrote them as plus 1 and lambda 0. So these lambdas are elements of the proper orthochronos two-dimensional Lorentz group, where this eta is the 2D Minkowski metric 1, 0, 0. OK, so now we want to start from this characterization and study what happens if we look at dimensions higher than 2. So in 3 plus 1 dimensions, we have lambda in SO plus 1, 3, where these stay formally the same. Of course, now instead of being 2 by 2 matrices, they are 4 by 4 matrices. And eta is minus 1, 1, 1, 1. And the rest are zeros. Now, if you want to write lambda as the exponent of some little lambda, we want to first that now we want to study what happens to this little one. So what we do, which kind of equation it must satisfy. So what we do is to look at it at first order in epsilon. Or maybe 1 to minus, it doesn't really matter. Plus order of epsilon square. So this is the identity matrix. Oops, I will not always write it in bold, but then we have the linear term. And so if we plug this in here, this becomes lambda transpose eta plus eta lambda equal 0. So we get this condition, which is the Lie algebra analog of this condition over here. So it's the requirement that an infinitesimal transformation preserves the Minkowski metric. So if we do it for rotations, what we get is, instead of eta, we get the identity. So we get that the matrix representing infinitesimal rotation is an antisymmetric matrix, because we want rotation transpose plus rotation equals zero. So this is the condition of antisymmetry. Here we get the following, because there is an extra minus signs on the in the time direction. So what we get is that if lambda satisfies this, then it is of this form. Psi 1, psi 2, psi 3. Psi 1, psi 2, psi 3. And here there is a 3 by 3 matrix, which is essentially infinitesimal rotation. So wherever we don't have the minus 1 acting, we get the same condition as for rotation, which is this R over here. And then we have our, like, the boost part gives us this symmetric piece for lambda, which is given by having this minus 1 over here. So another way. What do you want to see? Also, one more thing. There is an extra condition coming from this one. Maybe I should have mentioned it before, which is, let's say this is the double star. This one tells us that this tells us immediately that the trace of lambda should be zero, because if we develop the determinant of an expression like identity plus something, the first term in order epsilon is the trace of this matrix. This you probably know from linear algebra when you studied the characteristic polynomial of a function, but it's a standard identity that to find that this, the determinant of 1 minus epsilon is 1 minus epsilon the trace of lambda plus higher order. So this is a standard identity that is very useful. So if you're not familiar with it, just remember that. Remember this first term expansion.
Aldo?
Yes.
How did you know that the psi 1, psi 2, psi 3 are equal? Oh, because when you transpose it, okay, it has to give the same.
Yeah, so you just plug the most general 4 by 4 matrix in here.
And you get those.
And you get those. Yeah, it's not fancier than that. This is a nonlinear equation, so it's quite hard to set to the most general Lorentz transformation. If I have to check which kind of matrix element it has, it's gonna be a nightmare. There is, even in 2D, proving that this is the most general transformation that satisfies this equation takes a few steps. It's not done in a line. So if you want to find it in 3D, it's like that. There's no reason to try and do that. But at the linear level, it's quite simple, because this becomes a linear equation, so it's easy. So we're gaining quite a bit. Now, the advantage of this is also that it gets easily written in a basis. So what we do, so we see that psi 1 only appears here, psi 2 there, and this is antisymmetric. So we look for a basis of 3 by 3 antisymmetric matrices. And so what we obtain is the following. Let me maybe start here. So we have K1, which is 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. The rest are zeros. K2, similarly, is the I look where the component psi 2 goes, and this becomes 0, 1, 0, 0. These are all zeros. Same for K3. Okay. And then we look at the basis of for R. And in this case, we have that J1 is convenient to call J1 this one. The rest are zeros, J2. And J3. So what do we notice? We notice that essentially we have copies of this K for different axes, x, y, and z, and copies of this j for different axes, x, y, and z. So a rotation around the z-axis gets us this j on the plane, on the xy plane, and so on. There is a flip sign for j2, which is the most convenient choice, as we will now see. But now any lambda can be written as psi, a vector psi times a vector. So K here is a vector of matrices, right? So we have three matrices, K1, K2, and K3. We put them in, we order them in a vector of matrices, and this is, so this is just a shorthand notation for this one. And then we have something similar with theta j. And here, if I want to be, let's leave it like that. Now, so this, of course, represents an infinitesimal boost along the x-axis, along the y-axis, along the z-axis, and similarly for rotations. Now, the remark, the important remark, is that so we have lambda, a general lambda is of this form. So you can see lambda of a general psi and theta is the exponential of minus psi k minus theta j. So the exponential of matrices is a highly nonlinear equation. So this is absolutely different from anything like this. And now this is completely wrong. And so now we were going to study how wrong, how much. By studying how wrong this is, one is led to study the Lie algebras of these matrices, as I will now show. First, I want to say one brief remark, just a second, that there is one operation which is easy, which is the inverse. So the inverse is indeed obtained by flipping both signs at the same time. Yes?
I think we are supposed to have epsilon there. I mean, from the definition of lambda this way.
No, this is true even for a finite transformation.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is that any Lorentz transformation is actually an exponential of this form. Which form this K and J must have is studied by looking at the infinitesimal, the case where psi and theta are infinitesimal, but then this goes through, is true also for finite in the finite case.
So our k's and j's are not like that, right, in general?
No, no, our k's and j's are like that. So remember, in 2D, we had this. We proved that this is true for finite thetas and finite psi's. So in particular, if we take psi, let's say we take theta equals 0 and psi finite, we would get a cosh sinh 4 by, well, a 4 by 4 matrix where, okay, let's say we have lambda of psi for finite psi, this will be cosh psi sinh psi minus sinh psi cosh psi. And then what do we get? We get identities along the diagonal and zeros elsewhere. So this is, if you're not familiar with this, do it by hand. You can, it's not harder than the computation we did, but it will show you that you will keep getting these identities on the remainder of the diagonal. So this is a boost in the a finite boost in the x direction, which leaves untouched the y and z. So what we had seen is that if we do a Lorentz boost in one direction, the normal direction don't undergo a Lorentz contraction or dilation. So this comes out automatically over here. And the x and t plane gets rotated as we are used to. So this is true for any choice of psi. For any choice of vector psi, if you align ourselves to that direction, we get a matrix of this form. Similarly for rotations. Now, the issue is that here we are mixing the most general matrix with the most general psi and theta will be a complicated, will take a very complicated form. Okay, let me mention one identity that turns out useful. But, well, no, I want to talk about the algebra, otherwise, right, ahead of myself. So how wrong is this? In general, it's very wrong, but it can be quantified. So naively, from if a and b's were real numbers, here we would expect to find a plus b. But in fact, since we're dealing with matrices, there are corrective terms. In fact, there are infinitely many of them, which take the first view of which take this form. And the only one that is usually important to remember is the first one. The others is not that they're not important, but in computations, I usually, I never had to deal with those. But so this is known as the Campbell-Hausdorff Baker formula. Baker, thanks. Baker, Campbell, Hausdorff. And the coefficients that one has to put in front look quite crazy. They're not, they have a complicated formula. But the important thing is that the lack of additivity here is completely quantified by commutators. So the point is that the multiplication in the group somehow gets reflected into the commutator of the level of the Lie algebra. So in the group is encoded, but this is a very vague term. In the commutator of so the commutator here is this object. By definition, and is what defines the Lie bracket for the Lie algebra. So now we see that if we want to understand the group structure of the Lorentz group, how things compose, and we're working with this infinitesimal object that sit in the exponential, we have to understand how they commute with each other. So this is how the Lie algebra structure appears when we want to study the group. So now, for the Lorentz group, this leads us to study the Lorentz Lie algebra. And there are, well, one can do it by hand. What one finds is that gi gj is equal to minus epsilon ij k jk. Well, maybe I write it better up there. So the commutator of matrices is a Lie bracket, satisfies the three axiom of the Lie bracket quite simply. It's antisymmetric, it satisfies Jacobi thanks to the associativity of the matrix multiplication, and well, it's clearly bilinear. Here we get these. We need to remember. Let's see what this direction. And so it's quite simple to remember this. These signs is a bit conventional. I will tell you immediately which sign is not conventional. Because if I multiply my generator by minus 1, the left-hand side doesn't vanish, this flips sign. So this sign must be conventional. So here we get minus epsilon ijk. So j with j gives j. So rotations, if I commute two rotations, I get another rotation. If I commute the rotation and the boost, I get a new boost, which tells us that, as we will see in a moment, that this vector here, this vector k, transforms as a vector. It's correct to think of it as a three vector, because under rotation, it transforms as a vector, which is the information encoded in this bracket. And finally, there is this very important one, which tells us that the commutator of two boosts is what? Anybody of you knows? It's not a boost, it's a rotation. So this is telling us that rotations form a subalgebra of SO13. I didn't give names. So the Lorentz group the Lorentz algebra, usually the algebra is denoted with small Gothic letters, but anyway, this is SO13, then is the name that we give to the Lie algebra. So these rotations form a SO3 subalgebra of SO13, which we expected, because rotations are a subgroup of the Lorentz group. And this one tells us that boosts do not form a subalgebra. That is, the composition of boost is not a boost. It requires rotations. And this has physical effects. So this mathematical effect has physical consequences, for example, the Thomas precession of the spin. So what is also not conventional are the relative signs. So one one can flip this sign, one can flip this sign, but how does that? So if I change k, no matter which convention of for k I choose, this sign does not flip, whereas this sign flips. So in any case, although individually, these signs are not important, the three of them combined, the relative signs are important. So it's not that you can't put all pluses or all minuses in this one. There's no way. Yeah. Which one are plus and which one are minus is conventional to some extent. OK. So this, it's signs aside, which might be a bit tricky to remember, try to memorize what it looks like, because it's a very useful thing to know.
Is that a proper orthogonal group, or is it just SO?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So if I'm exponentiating element of the, as we said, the full Lorentz group, so O13 is I'm not sure which notation to use, but is SO plus 13 together with parity and time reversal symmetry. But these are discrete symmetries. They flip things. So they have no infinitesimal version. So if I look at the infinitesimal version of this group, or that group, will be the same. So in fact, this algebra knows at best about the proper orthochoronous Lorentz group. Yes.
So my question is, can I somehow derive these without going through the entire process of finding explicit matrices, some explicit bases, and then commuting them? Is that
That's what we did. So these, the way to discover that is to take one by one those six matrices, commuting them, and you look at what comes out on the right hand side.
But this seems kind of not too practical. Is there some other way to derive this?
Well, the point is that these are called structure constants of the Lie algebra, whichever numbers come out here. And these are basis dependent. So although the Lie algebra is an abstract entity, which exact number appear here depends on which basis I'm choosing to describe this algebra. So that's what you have to do in a way. Choose a basis, a nice one possibly, and compute the structure constants. So for example, if I take and multiply this by 2, this will get multiplied by or divided by 2. And if I choose a I can choose basis where I take linear combination of these, and these things will all change, but the underlying algebra would be the same. But yeah, you need to pick a basis to compute the structure constant. Yeah, so these nodes at best, you're right. So that's a good point. The Lie algebra knows knows only about the component of the group which is connected to the identity. The component of the group which is connected to the identity, and in the case of the Lorentz group, this would be SO plus 1,3 inside either SO 1,3 or O 1,3. So that's why there's no need to put plus or minus plus here. There is just one. Okay, one. So I said that the second bracket is telling us that boosts behave like is like the vector of boost matrices is really like a 3D vector, and this is encoded in the following So consider a pure rotation, and say R and we want to conjugate the matrix psi k. So what is this matrix over here, just to clarify, to make sure that the notation is clear. So this will be this matrix. And this matrix, I will not try to write it because it's a general 3D rotation, which will look quite disgusting in components. But the point is that this is equal to, so doing a boost, so what is this trying to tell us? I take a reference system, I rotate it, I do an infinitesimal boost in the direction psi, and I rotate it back. This is the same as doing an infinitesimal boost in the rotated direction. And this is a consequence of of this equation. So to convince ourselves that these two things are related, we can take R, which can take phi infinitesimal, and this becomes, so idea, so we do R is equal to 1 minus phi j plus etc. We write this, so we're then, we write this equation at first order. So this becomes psi k plus, sorry, minus, oops, this is a trans, no, it's okay. What am I doing? Minus phi j psi k. Now, remember, this is anti-symmetric, so R inverse, I should have, R inverse is the same as R transpose, and it's equal to 1 plus phi j at first order. So here we get a plus. Plus higher orders in phi. Now, this is what? So this is, well, maybe I write it here. So this is minus the sum over I and j, let's say, of phi I psi j. And here we have ji kj minus kj ji. So this is the commutator. But the commutator, we know that gives us epsilon k. So this is epsilon psi j epsilon I j k. So I think here we have a plus epsilon I j k k k. So how do we see this? Well, we need to compute the right hand side. So what is R psi infinitesimally will be psi minus phi j acting on psi. This is a little bit more confusing now. So what do we mean by this expression? This expression, so this is now the generator of rotations. We are forgetting about the fact that it is embedded in 4D. We just look at it as a 3D matrix, so we forget about the first line and first column over there, because here we are thinking of, so I should have maybe written it like this. So this is the action of a 3D rotation over a vector, and this is the 3D rotation seen as an element of the Lorentz group, right? So this is in 4D, this is an operation in 3D, but it's the same rotation, just embedded in. So what is this one? So this matrix, so the I component, if I look at the ith generator and I look at the jk component of this ith generator, this will be minus epsilon ijk. So this is why I chose that particular convention of signs, that the second one looks flipped. But in fact, this is, in a sense, the right choice, because it's the one that gives me full covariance of all the expressions. So if I look at that, this becomes equal to psi minus phi sum over I phi I epsilon I sorry, let's say R3 psi. So which component are we want to look at? We want to look at, oops, here I should have written J and K. Sorry. Here I want to look at the component J. Let's say J, J, epsilon I, epsilon IJK with a plus psi K. Does this make sense? I'm plugging in this expression inside here. Here there is a dot. So phi I is contracted with JI, and then JK are the indices of the matrix, and the matrix is contracted with psi K. So now I compare to this expression and I find that it checks. Hopefully, also the signs check. Otherwise, I made a sign mistake. But
Did you put the second equation to the first one to get the third one?
Yeah. So this is like this.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm just contracting these with. Let me put it in red. Phi I, and this becomes this element here, and I'm just so now this is a matrix with indices j k, which multiply psi k to get another vector, and this is this vector. Now if I want to contract it with KJ to get this object over here. I need to write it here. Equal to KJ. And so the first term checks out is psi dot K. And the second one gives me this object over here, which is phi, psi, and k all contracted together with an epsilon. So I hope the signs are fine, but it should work. So this is telling me, well, I could also, if one wanted, have written these with the rotation acting on the k. That would be the same thing. Up to a sign, like you need to transpose this or put the inverse. So this is also equal to psi, except that this notation becomes even more confusing what I mean by it. But this would be also, but this is a 3D matrix. Well, this is just more confusing. Let's not look at it. But this should be okay. So does this, is this confusing, helpful? So I can even exponentiate this. And let's say that here, I've been using this equation. So for example, just to answer to your question, if I took J2 with the signs inverted, which sounded like maybe more natural, I would have not been able to write those expressions in any nice way, because all this, there would be plenty of wrong signs. Because that would not be an epsilon anymore. That choice of sign is actually quite the right one in quote, because it's the one that allows the J's to transform as vectors and the K as vectors in this sense. Yes.
And is there some like notion of isomorphism of like the algebras? Because if I take a different basis, I'm going to get like a different abstract algebra, but they should give the same group.
No, abstractly they are the same. They're just differently expressed in in a basis, right? So what matters? So this definition is abstract. Now I'm choosing a basis that satisfies this. That.
So if I think of the algebra as some set of commutators, those commutators will change, right?
No. So what the Lie algebra of the Lorentz group abstractly is the set of is the six-dimensional vector space of matrices that satisfies this together with their commutator, and this is basis independent. So that could be a way. I didn't mention the dimensionality of this space. So this is a six-dimensional vector algebra. Like I have six. A Lie algebra. I have six generators. So there are 3 K's and 3 J's. So it's a six-dimensional algebra. Now, from these, I can even go a little bit farther and exponentiate this equation. And this is more to see how to work with this type of expression. So now, you see a remark. There is this simple remark, which says that if I'm conjugating I have the exponential, and I'm conjugating the exponential. This is the same as doing this operation, as conjugating the matrix in the exponent. Why? Well, this is quite simple, because the exponential is just the sum of powers of a n, and m a n m minus 1 is clearly the same as m a m minus 1 to the n. Because if I think about it, the square, you have m a m minus 1, m a m minus 1, m minus 1 and m eat each other. So it becomes m a m minus 1, so which would be this other side. So this is a simple identity, just due to the fact that I have an m on the left and m minus 1 on the right. But it becomes this. And so from this, I can also deduce that R exp of psi k R minus 1 is the same as exp of minus R in 3D now, acting on my boost vector times k. So this can be helpful if I want to. Maybe it's easier to compute the boost in some particular direction, and then I can just rotate it in the direction I like through this type of expression. And in fact, I'll leave you to prove that this goes through also if there are rotations. But the proof is exactly the same. Minus theta. So let me write it like this, maybe. Lambda psi theta r minus 1 is equal to and this is because also the rotations generator rotate with respect to themselves. So I'm using the first two relations in that Lie algebra, the first two of those commutators to obtain this. So this is useful. I think with Gang, when you do QFT and you start studying how to build out fields from particle states, and you want fields that transform appropriately under Lorentz transformations and so on, is very important to you will do a bunch of these operations. So that's why I'm mentioning it here, so that in QFT, when you will start seeing it again, it will look a bit more familiar. I leave you an exercise. So the exercise is the following. To prove that this algebra that I defined is the same as SL2C. So SL2C is the is the Lie algebra of SL2C, which is the special linear group in two complex dimensions. So these are invertible 2x2 complex matrices of determinant 1. Right? So linear and special means that determinant is 1. So invertible, of course, is redundant with the determinant condition. Now, if they weren't invertible, they wouldn't form a group, so I wouldn't be able to compute their Lie algebra. So these are so this is the Lie algebra of that. And it turns out that this has also 6 real generators, so there is a bit of one has to be careful about what how one counts things, but this is a 6-dimensional real vector space. So here real is important and is isomorphic to that. So there is an obvious basis given by the Pauli matrices of this that gives you, again, that algebra. And so again, this is important because this is the same type of relationship that there is between SO3 and SU2. For the Lorentz group, you get it between the proper orthochronous Lorentz group and SL2C. So if you study spinors and the Lorentz transformation of spinors, SL2C will be the relevant group, in the same way as SU2 is the relevant group to study the spin in quantum mechanics.
Over there, when you wrote the difference, like 4-dimensional R matrix and a 3-dimensional R matrix, could that have just been solved if you write psi as 0, psi 1, psi 2, psi 3? Like or is that?
I would say that conceptually it wouldn't be right, because I will never apply a boost to that psi. So this is really a 3D object. Is not a 3D object embedded in R4. These are 3D vectors. There's no psi mu. That doesn't make sense. So the Lorentz group is generated by the 6-dimensional Lie algebra, which I decomposed as 2 copies of R3. But it can't be R4, R4. So this is really not a 4D object embedded in R3. This is genuinely 3D. Okay. Yes.
On this Lie algebra, is there any natural notion of an inner product?
Of?
An inner product.
Well, you there's more than one.
Okay.
So what does it mean natural? Natural usually means adjoint invariant.
I was just looking for a way to say that these generators form a nice basis, an orthogonal basis.
I would say that this is nice. So the inner product inside the Lie algebra is not the most natural object. So it is important in for certain applications, but it isn't. It's not part of what makes a Lie algebra a Lie algebra. It's some additional structure that we look into it. Unless it's semi-simple, and then there is a unique choice of nice inner product. SL2C or SO13 are not semi-simple, and there are different choices of natural limit problems. The two are, in fact, you know them, in fact, probably. We will see them in electromagnetism. You have f mu nu, or f mu nu, f rho sigma, epsilon f mu nu, rho sigma. Those are two different types of contractions that give you two inner products in the Lorentz algebra. So how they are related to this is not clear yet. So this concludes, I think, this chapter, and we have half an hour. I want to do another thing that is, so I wanted to introduce so that we can use it next time for the relativistic mechanics, the Einstein notation with the x mu for vectors and so on. It's kind of a new chapter, so if you have questions about the Lie algebra of the Lorentz group, please. So to recap, why is the Lie algebra important? Because it contains all the information about the group, the finite group, except that it's encoded in an infinitesimal form, and therefore it's linear. And so, as always, well, it's linear up to these brackets, which are, but you get, for example, this linear equation that tells you what the Lie algebra should be. So it's easy to control. Then it's nice. It's easy to find a nice basis for this Lie algebra, which is nicely covariant in with respect to rotations, at least. It's much more manageable than working with the full Lorentz group in four dimensions, whose matrix elements are just too complicated to usually write down. And in any case, it contains all the information. So when we will write down a relativistic field theory and we want to look at the Noether theorem, like the charges associated to Lorentz invariants via the Noether theorem, what we will care about, for example, is just infinitesimal version of the Lorentz transformations. And so what we will need are these matrices J and K and not the generic big lambda. So this is another case where this will be enough to give us what we need. So these will probably be familiar to many of you, but I still want to go through it a little slowly. So consider V a vector space, an element in V, and EI, like written with the index down, is a basis of V. What does it mean? It means that every V can uniquely be written as the sum of these. So I will not do it always, but let me put an under bar. It's like a bold symbol. So these symbols with an underline are elements of V. Whereas these are just real numbers. This is a bunch of real numbers. This is an element of V. So element of V. And this is a bunch of real numbers. And there is, and this decomposition is unique. So if the vectors, so. Now I define, so does this make sense to everybody? Yeah, OK. So now we have V star is the dual of V. So what is the dual space? The dual space is defined as the space of linear maps from V into R. This is also a vector space, an n-dimensional vector space, dimension n vector space, and we take so every alpha in V star can be written as the sum of a I fi. And we denote alpha v is by definition the valuation of this linear map from v to r in alpha. It's usually written like this because, in fact, alpha and v play a much more symmetric role than this would suggest.
So the underbar here is not the same.
No, it's not the same. But again, this is a bunch of real numbers. These are not. So that's why I'm doing it. So it's important. The position of the indices will be important. So if you're writing it down, take care of putting them in the right place. And this I here is just, I have n of them. So that's why there are e. It's written. OK. Now, given a basis of VI, there is a natural way of choosing a basis of V star. Given EI, I can choose a dual basis of V star such that Fi ij is either 0 or 1. So it's 0 if they are the indices are different, and 1 if they are the same. In this way, a generic alpha v can be written as the sum of, so remember, this is linear, right? So in particular, we have that alpha lambda v is alpha lambda v, which is lambda alpha v, right? Because this is linear. So these are real numbers. So since these are real numbers, this goes out, and it gives us the sum of alpha e v alpha I v I. Sorry. So let me write it maybe more pedantically for once. So this is delta I j, and this is the sum over I alpha I V I. Now, since I've been careful of picking lower indices for the basis of V and upper indices for the basis of V star, whenever these two appear like these with the same index, in fact, it means that they have been contracted and sum over. So I will always write these from now on without the sum symbol. And there shouldn't be any confusion. This is called the Einstein's notation. And this makes sense only if one is high and one is low, and it appears only twice. It never can appear three times the same index. That doesn't make sense. It means that you've made a mistake somewhere, lost track of something. So this is the way we will write it. And it also, we will write in the same way V and alpha as VI, EI, and alpha I. Now, how do these, what happens if we choose a different basis? So let's say I have a map from V to V, which is invertible. This allows us to take to define a new set of basis element . So this is taking the first basis element, applying the transformation, and getting us a new one. Now we can ask, how do we want the dual basis to transform? So this is a definition. How does the dual basis transform? So what we want is that F prime I with E prime J, we want this to still be delta I J, but this is, I should have introduced, new symbol, but like a new concept. Let me do it like this. So this is that, and I call the transpose the matrix such that the following is true. Alpha V is equal to M transpose alpha V and M transpose, So whatever matrix satisfies acting on the dual makes this identity true for every alpha and V is called the transpose transformation. And so here I write this as the transpose of EI, and I want this to be FI, the old one. So we have that F prime I is equal to the transpose of Fi, inverse transpose, and the inverse of the transpose and the transpose of the inverse are the same. So we have this type of equation, and now we look. So we did all of that to work in components, in fact, so we can work with the VIs and alpha I's. So what happens to the components? So V so we have that V prime. So wait just a second. Let me do first one thing. So we can think we can also take this new basis and check what are its components in the old basis. So this is also something we can do. So this is fi. New basis developed on the old one. Developed on the old one. So we want to write e prime I equal to something ei. Well, e I j I I j. What is this? Well, to compute it, we just do it like this. F I m e I. And by definition, we call this m I. Oops. Sorry, all my. This is what this is. So now we are ready to compute v prime I. V prime I is nothing else than the new v. Well, I can. So the components, now I can ask the components of V in the new basis. So notice I'm not changing what V is. V is at the same time VI, EI, and V prime I, EI prime. So I'm not transforming V, I'm just transforming the basis. So what is V prime I? V prime I is V in the new basis. So I just look at the components by contracting with the dual element, and this will give me M transpose minus 1 Fi V, which is, I can put it on the other side, Fi M minus 1 V. So this is nothing else than M minus 1 Ij Vj. So in a way, this transform by the inverse. And this is normal because if this product has to stay the same, if this transform with m, this must transform with n minus 1. What happens to alpha? Well, the same type of computation tells me that alpha So, and we notice that this is the second, that is the low index with the top index, of course. And this is the top index here with the low one. And I'm not flipping the order of these things. So this is, in a way, you can also write it like this if you prefer. It doesn't matter. The order of these things doesn't matter because it's the sum of a product of real numbers. So it's they commute. Okay, now I want to think of these linear maps in a slightly different fashion. I assume all you're familiar with this, right? So, okay. Now, suppose I have a linear map from V in V. And I write it in components. Aij as f I a I. So I look at I j. And of course, how does this transform? This transforms. This is equal to f I prime a. These are not equal. I'm saying something wrong. So, and but I can also look at it in the new basis, and I can ask how are these two related. So this is again the same type of exercise, but and I will we will see in a second what I want to get. I k m l j a k l. So we see that we have the upper index here that transforms as a vector, and the lower index that transforms as a dual vector. So we call these a contravariant index and these as we call it covariant. Now the point is this suggests that we can think of A as a combination of vectors and covectors, as an element of V tensor V star. So what is this? That is, we want to think of A as the sum over I and J of A I J F J. Well, maybe I should use a K so that is more readable. F K A I. And then so you see, we started from a map, a linear map, from the vector space into itself. And we interpreted it instead as an element of a tensor product of the vector space with its dual. So how does it work in this way? So we recover the map by contracting. Oops, sorry. So we have the picture in which A is an element, is a map, and then we get V goes to AV, and let's call it W. Or we have A as an element of the dual, and V goes to what? Well, how do I think of this mapping? Well, I think of pairing V with the component in here. So this is Aij Vj, and this I think of it as Aij Fiv. Sorry, what am I? This is times. Did I write it? Oh, sorry. I should have flipped this, first of all. A, I, F, K. They need to be flipped because I put V first and not second. But so this is E, I, F, J, V. So there is only one way in which I can pair an element V with something in here, which is in the second slot. And this is just the same as that one. Is this clear how I can do this flip, this different way of thinking? And at this point, nothing forbids me to reiterate this idea, and so I can have something, some tensor T, which is an object that lives in different copies of this, and I can do whatever I want here. So in this case, my T will have an upper index, a lower index, another lower index, an upper and a lower. And the order is important. And then I can, by contracting these indices with elements of indices in V or V star, I can think of these as maps from like dualizing again, right? So I can think of this V star as giving us a linear map from these to V. Say it the opposite way. So for example, I can think of V as being a linear map from V to, for example, these other ones. So V, V star, and V. Of course, it's important to keep track of the orders. I could have done in here, but I should have kept track of the order and so on. And again, these indices will transform contravariantly and covariantly. And then I can contract them. I can, for example, take the trace of A by contracting internal indices, and so on and so forth. So this T will be the sum over I, J, K, L, M of this gigantic object with AI tensor, FJ tensor, FK tensor, AL, just to make it completely explicit, and so on. So this is what the abstract object is, and this is written in a basis. And then I can just keep track of its components and think of them as transforming contravariantly and covariantly. Contravariant and JKM are covariant. And the reasoning will be exactly the same as we did over here. Let me conclude with one small thing. Suppose now we have a function over our vector space. I want to define the gradient of this function. Gradient and derivatives. So how do we do this? So a vector defines a derivative. So this sends the map f to the map vf, which is defined as the limit for epsilon that goes to 0. Vf evaluated at x is x plus epsilon v minus f of x. So you see, so x is an element of my vector space. Epsilon is just an infinitesimal number. And in the usual way, I can define the derivative. So a vector defines a derivative of a function. And in a basis, I can do the following. I define dIf as the derivative with respect to that given vector. To that basis vector. And therefore, I can define V of f becomes Vi dI of f. So we make sense of this writing. And now this is valid for every sort of basis of this vector space. And it should also be clear that this is not, it's completely an invariant way of thinking about what this directional derivative is. It does not depend on which basis we are choosing. But once we write it like this, this is depends It's a way of thinking about it which is basis dependent. Generalize to vector fields. V, so a vector field V of x is an assignment of a vector in V at every point of V. And in this case, we have that V of f is Vi of x. So field in the physics sense. So we have a vector for every point on top of every point of our vector space. Okay, so we conclude here. Next time we briefly pick up from here, do it the same thing relativistically, have another quick look at lambdas, at the lambda written in a relativistic notation. So instead of splitting in 3 plus 1 and using these 3D kind of indices, we look at what happens if we want to be fully covariant. And then we do mechanics.